Hi, today's August 30th, 2015. This is MobiViews Podcast number 129. I'm Todd Ogasawart, my good friend John Westfall, and this week we have kind of a hodgepodge of Android and more Android and some more Android and Apple TV and stuff John's been buying.
Yeah, stuff I've been buying and a decision, a monumental decision.
Monumental decision.
Reversing a four-year trend for me.
Life-changing decision.
It is. And it was a decision that as soon as I made it on Thursday, I immediately felt more free and more, less wasteful in the world. But we'll get to that in a few moments.
Wow, that sounds pretty amazing.
Yeah, it was great.
Okay, the first thing I'd like to mention is something I was complaining about probably an episode or two back. And that is that Google had released an update to its Android Wear for smartwatches firmware that allowed interactive watch faces. And I was complaining that my Moto 360 had not yet received that firmware. And given past history where it had not gotten it in timely fashion, I didn't expect to get it for at least a couple of weeks or even months. But lo and behold, earlier this week, it appeared on my watch. And I have been playing around with a couple of interactive watch faces. And, you know, they're pretty interesting. I mean, they're not great. I won't say they're life-changing like John's decision. But the one watch face I got for free lets you see a time and a little bit of temperature data and a few other things if you tap the little... What are those things called? Complications.
Complications.
Little complications in a watch face. The other one I paid 99 cents for, and while it's very nice... The complications don't seem to be interactive, so I'm not sure what's up with that. I might email the developer and say, what am I missing here?
What am I paying for anyway?
Yeah, I spent about 99 cents, right.
Yeah.
But it is a very nice watch face, and it does have information that, well, apparently not interactive. It does have, actually, let me take a look at it real quick. It does have temperature, kind of weather indication. This is cloudy, date, and also a compass. And a pedometer, although I don't use I turned off my watch's pedometer feature, so it's not going to record steps. But it's pretty interesting. I'm kind of hopeful. And it is something that I don't think the Apple Watch has right now, at least the third-party stuff. I don't know if the complications on the Apple Watch are interactive. Are they, John?
Well, they're interactive in the sense that you tap on them and they take you to the app that displays the data.
Okay.
And they update as needed. So when you were talking about some of the things yours shows, I was thinking about how I've basically found it invaluable that I can look at my watch at any time and see, for example, the temperature outside or what time my next appointment is or what even that next appointment is. So I really have gotten very dependent on being able to do that fairly quickly for, in my opinion, with the Apple Watch. So. Yeah. I think you will find that as you get watch faces that do more and more, you'll probably find them more and more addicting, and you'll use them more often.
You know, that's interesting you mentioned that. You know, the other interactive watch face I use does show number of email messages and things, but this one doesn't. Not email messages, appointments. This one does not actually show upcoming appointments, so that's okay. I'm enjoying... Oh, and it also lost contact with my phone, but we'll deal with that later.
It is trying to escape from you right now is what it's actually trying to do.
In any case, I'm still pretty happy with my Android Wear watch. It just got connection back. I don't know what's going on. It's been doing that since yesterday where it'll lose connection with my Nexus 4 and then it'll get it back.
It's trying to tell you something, but what that something is, we do not know.
Mm. And and it is on Wi-Fi. You know, I've got it set up so it talks over Wi-Fi. So even though it's about, 12 feet apart right now, which is still within Bluetooth distance. It should switch to Wi-Fi if it doesn't see it on Bluetooth, so I'm not sure what's going on.
Just taunting you.
Yeah, more Android-ish stuff. Cortana, Microsoft's Cortana for Android beta was released. And I wrote a piece for extremetech.com on it because initially I said, who cares? You know, Google Now works fine on my phone, on my Android phone, so why would I want Cortana? Then I read a piece in, what was it in? I think it was in Recode that said the Google Now team at Google got so disillusioned by their new CEO's lack of interest or indifference to the project that they quit.
Oh, wow.
So Then I got worried. I said, well, you know, Google is kind of infamous for letting projects slide, right? Even big ones that they invested a lot of money in, like Google Plus, Google Voice, so Orkut. which was big elsewhere. In the U.S., it was nothing. But I know in other countries, Orkut was a huge, huge service. So it wouldn't surprise me if they let Google Now slide into the abyss of, you know, of nothingness, of stagnation. So I got interested in Cortana for Android. It's not quite the same. I think the lack of integration with Android, which they say is coming, is the problem, part of the problem. The other part of the problem is, I think, unless you're invested in the Microsoft ecosystem for the calendar and that sort of thing, I'm not sure what it's doing with that sort of information. It can see my Google Calendar, but it doesn't show it in its summary of things that may interest you, unless you specifically ask it to say something like show my calendar.
You know, that's an interesting point, that it really is how much investment and your life is in the different ecosystems. I started using Google or Apple Music when it launched, and I'm still in my 3-month trial period with it. And I'll probably keep it because, honestly, I like it better than Spotify, just because it's so integrated into the phone and iOS and macOS. But the interesting thing that I took for granted this week was I was on my way home, and my drive home is extremely short now, thankfully, after many years of a long drive, and so I can usually listen to one song. I thought, well, what do I want to listen to today? And I thought, well, I don't really want anything from my albums. yeah, my one song. I thought, what one song would I like? And so since I had to pick quickly, because otherwise if I think too long about this, I won't have time for the one song, I said, hey, Siri, play me the number one hit on this day in 1965.
No kidding.
And sure enough, that song started playing, and it was just kind of an interesting thing to see what 50 years ago was the number one song.
And what was the number one song?
The Ballad of the Green Berets.
Oh, interesting. From the movie, by the way.
Yeah. So that was an interesting – it was just kind of fun sort of things like that that you can do with when you have integration on a platform so deeply.
And yeah.
So that's the problem with all these personal digital assistants is that – they don't integrate, I think, as well as they possibly could. Although I will say I am happy that Siri will use my calendar data from Google because I still use Google Calendar for everything.
Yeah.
And apparently Cortana doesn't like to play with Google Calendar as much from what you said.
Well, that's a tricky one. You know, it can read it because, like I said, if I say show me my calendar, events, whatever it is I said, it will display it. But if I simply bring up the Cortana's list of things it thinks is interesting, it doesn't show any events.
Hmm.
So, Google Now, it's one that's pretty much at the top of the list, right? Like, what's coming up for you?
Yeah, and it's the same thing with iOS. You know, like I said, I use a Google Calendar for everything. Mm-hmm. And when I look at the Today View, notifications, it's got exactly, right now I'm looking at tomorrow, so it just looks like you have a busy day tomorrow. There are 8 events scheduled. The first one starts at 8:30. So that's what I come to expect. I would find it very weird if I asked Cortana, what am I doing tomorrow? And it said no events because I'd have to explicitly ask for my calendar.
Yeah, I've got to take a closer look at it. It's not clear to me what it says. But at any rate, I have an initial set of impressions about Cortana for Android beta, and I should note it is beta, so there are some features that are not there yet. You can go to extremetech.com and take a look at that. I was just wondering, too, did you buy an Amazon Echo?
No, I did not.
I've been thinking about buying one for my mom, who is a non-technical person, because, you can just talk to her, right? You don't even have to type.
Yeah.
I got to think about this. I got to think of how it will work for a senior citizen. Okay, and next up, something again I have been waiting for forever. So, Google Fi, they're an MVNO, so they use both Sprint and T-Mobile to provide service under the Google Fi umbrella. And I got the invitation using my normal Gmail account months and months ago, but as soon as I verified that it would destroy my Google Voice service, and quite literally, and I spoke to Google Voice tech support to confirm what I had understood, and they said that's true. I decided not to exercise that invitation. I created a second Google Mail account and then applied again. The tech support guy, by the way, said, oh, you'll get in a few days. Well, you know, like 3 months later, I got my second invitation early last week. And I signed up for Google Fi under that second account, ordered a Nexus 6, since I do not have a Nexus 6. And we'll see how this runs. I should be getting the phone soon, I hope. I think I got an email from Google Store saying that it's ready to ship. So I'm hoping I'll see it sometime this week. And I'll be switching over from T-Mobile to Google Fi, which is, as I said earlier, a combination of T-Mobile and Sprint. So my coverage should be no worse and maybe a little bit better than what I've experienced so far.
It's interesting. I'm on Google Fi's page right now and looking at how much it would cost me to get Google Fi with the features I have now, including the data cap I have.
Yeah.
And for me, since Verizon has kind of grandfathered me into various things and has given me promo data here and there, it would be about $120 a month on Google Fi for me to get the data I have and the Fi basics. Even dropping down to the data without promo data, it's still at $100 a month. So Google Fi, I think when it came out, the idea was, wow, this is going to be so much more cost-effective. But I'll be interested to hear your experiences with it to see how much it makes a difference in terms of your quality and also your price that you're paying.
Well, I can tell you the price now. So as you may recall, T-Mobile unceremoniously dumped my grandfathered plan last year, just before I was going to go visit my daughter, as a matter of fact, fly to visit my daughter. And they in ungrandfathering my grandfathered plan, they also deleted my data ability without telling me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was still paying the money, so I was paying for data service. They just dumped it. And it took me, you know, like a day to figure out what the heck was going on, trying to troubleshoot it myself, that sort of thing. Called them, found out what happened, had them switch me to their new simpler plan at the time. So I've been paying about $50 a month plus fees and taxes for unlimited voice, unlimited text messaging, and 1 gigabyte of data per month.
Mm-hmm.
Under the new plan, I'll be paying $30.
Yep.
For all of that. So for me, it'll be a $20 a month savings.
As long as you also have, you know, as reliable of a network or, you know.
Right. And in
$20 theory, cheaper of network quality or something
right.
like that.
And in theory, it should be a little bit better because, as I mentioned, I'm already on T-Mobile. So mm-hmm. they use T-Mobile. Google uses T-Mobile as one of its two carriers. The other is Sprint. Both have pretty decent footprints where I live. And in other areas, I know that's not true. And also, it can do calling over Wi-Fi. So if I'm, you know, say in an underground bunker, which is not unusual for me as you might think, you know, where you basically can't get cellular service, but there is some kind of Wi-Fi I can hook into, theoretically, I should be, and it's not being blocked by a firewall or something. Theoretically, I should be able to still make phone calls.
I worry about your day job outside of this podcast. An underground bunker that isn't
where server farms are and things like that.
Oh, well, yeah.
Which I don't do as much as I used to, but every now and then.
I mean, the way you speak of this, it kind of sounds like the farm in the Matrix where humans are grown. It doesn't sound as innocent as we might hope. Well, hopefully you will get a good experience out of this, and I'll be interested to hear about it because I've thought about in the past, since I am on Apple for pretty much everything and I have just one device, I've thought about picking up a relatively current Android device and having service on that and just kind of seeing what I like out of both ecosystems.
Right. I will mention one slight disappointment in this. As you might recall that when Google Fi rolled out initially, what was it, this past spring, I guess, about March or April, somewhere around then, they were handing out welcome kits, which included a charger and some kind of a case and I forget what else. But a couple of things, a couple of very well-received and appreciated items, accessories for the Nexus 6. I did not see that option, so I assume I'm not getting a welcome kit. It's okay, you know, I understand.
Not you don't need deal. Google to welcome you.
Yeah, they don't need to welcome me.
Well, maybe it'll show up. Maybe it'll be an unexpected welcome guest.
That would be nice. But if it doesn't, it doesn't. No big deal. Now, speaking of Apple, and then I guess the next podcast we'll talk about that. Speaking of Apple, the rumor in 9to5Mac, which is usually a pretty good source of rumors in terms of being accurate, they're saying that the new Apple TV is going to come in at under $200. Now, the current Apple TV is now also well under
$100.
Yes. Well, it's well under $100.
In terms of accuracy, yes. I mean, I think the new Apple TV is going to definitely come in under $5 million.
Yeah. I think that's a pretty good bet.
Yeah.
But, you know, let's say under $200 means, you know, $150 or $199. That's kind of expensive to add Siri and the ability to install apps.
Well, and it's something that I find a bit odd, given Apple making a big deal out of dropping the price of the original Apple TV.
Right. What is it now, 69?
It's 69 now. I could see if you were going to introduce a higher-end Apple TV, you would have kind of, okay, you can get the old version for 69 now. We're dropping that from 99 to 69, and you can have this new one for 149 or something like that. I could see announcing that all on one day. But when you announce at the beginning that Apple TV is dropping the 69 and we are investing in Apple TV, which is kind of what they said at the last conference at WWDC, it kind of made it out to be like there's going to be an upgrade to Apple TV. And since Apple normally charges the same price for their upgraded version, you know, you just the old version goes out and then the updated version is what you buy. That is kind of what I had assumed, that there would just be one Apple TV. I thought 69 was a bit low, but I thought, well, maybe they found some great way to make it, you know, work.
Well, they had to compete with the Roku and the Amazon Fire TV, which are both about $50.
So I'll be interested to see what Apple does, in fact, do about this. And the 9to5Mac article does say that basically Apple executives are still trying to figure it out themselves.
Mm.
But it would seem I could definitely see paying $149 for an upgraded Apple TV that would be a premium streaming box versus the Roku, which would be more of your, you know, basically, I guess, budget plan or the Fire TV. And keeping a new generation of the smaller Apple TVs, which I think is what the 9to5Mac article is hinting at would happen.
Right.
But I really couldn't see getting to $199 or around that level for an Apple TV. I mean, in any event, I will probably buy one because my Apple TV right now is a second gen, and I've wanted to kind of use it for some hobby projects, but I've been waiting until a new Apple TV comes out. So I'll be interested to see how this unveils, I assume, not this week, but
week after, something like that.
Announcement is correct?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think it's the 9th or something like that. So we're still a ways away from it.
Yeah.
You know, this is in our show notes, but speaking of things discontinued or, you know, lower end, some of you might remember the Apple iPhone 5C for color, which is now completely discontinued. It's gone.
Yes, it was an interesting little device, and it was definitely I think a lot of the place I honestly saw it the most. I hardly ever saw people using one.
Uh-huh.
But I did see it on a lot of TV shows because it was colorful.
Really? I never saw one on a TV show.
So I think set designers kind of liked it because you could have kind of these cool color phones and they were easy to get probably. And,
yeah.
You know, one of the shows I watch all the time is Modern Family. And Modern Family, several of the characters use the 5C because they've got different case colors on it and things like that on it.
You might recall that the iPad kind of debuted in Modern Family too, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, Modern Family did a whole episode where the unveiling of the iPad was a central plotline. So
they're on ABC, right? Which is just
well, and they are also the
essentially
ones that,
part of the Jobs family.
Yeah, this last year did a whole episode shot on Apple devices.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And basically, the whole episode appears that you are watching one of the characters' laptop screens.
Wow.
And so, you know, she sends and receives Siri calls and looks up things on Safari. And it's basically, people have described it as one giant ad for Apple. but it was an interesting premise. And they actually shot all the video using iPads and things like that. So it's
kind of like an Apple commercial. Sort of, definitely.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's funny. I actually know somebody bought an Apple iPhone 5C after me trying to dissuade this person from doing so, saying, I don't think that's a good idea. You might as well spend a little bit more and get a real iPhone.
Get a real iPhone.
You know, instead of this little toy thing. But, oh well, hopefully a person's still happy with the purchase.
Maybe for a lot of kids, it's you know, my first iPhone.
I guess so. Okay, now speaking of being happy, your life-changing decision was to move to Antarctica, no?
Exactly. And as soon as I realized that I would be out of oppressive heat and that I would get used to wearing 85 layers of clothing, I figured that it would be okay. Yeah. So here's the background. I grew up on computers, and through most of my computer life, I had at least two or three primary machines. I'd have a laptop that would travel with me places. I would have another older laptop at home that was kind of the permanent machine, or maybe a desktop I built at home, a server running at home, et cetera, et cetera. And I lived that way for a long time. And then about 5 years ago, I started thinking about maybe simplifying. And so I got rid of the big server that lived at home, and I got rid of all my desktop machines, and I just went to a MacBook Pro that I had gotten. And I had a couple old laptops, but they were just kind of sitting in a bag. I never really used them. Then I bought in 2011 a MacBook Air, and I had to figure out what to do with the MacBook Pro. And I kind of used it on and off, and then eventually it just kind of got retired, and I'd open it up from time to time and start it up and, you know, all that sort of thing. And then this last March, I bought a MacBook Pro 2015 version. And I thought, well, okay, now the Air is going to go kind of the way the MacBook went. Well, a couple of months ago, I was looking at these two MacBooks that are still in relatively good shape. The 2009 edition, from what I've heard from people, if you upgrade it, it can run Yosemite very nicely for a very small upgrade price to get the RAM up a little higher. And I thought, well, gee, and the MacBook Air is still in very nice shape. So I thought, well, why am I have these two devices just kind of sitting here doing nothing? And so this week I decided, you know what? I'm done lugging a laptop back and forth to work. I'm going to take one of the old MacBook Air. It's going to live at my office permanently. I've got a nice little dock for it there, and it's tethered down since it's my own personal machine, so it's not going to go wandering off. And I'm going to keep the MacBook Pro at home. And I figured the big thing that I enjoyed about going to one device was that I wouldn't have as much fragmentation. But with cloud syncing the way it is, and the fact that not only are my files synced between the two using OneDrive, my settings and a lot of other things are synced using iCloud. You know, Apple has fully integrated iCloud stuff to such an extent that, you know, my email signatures and stuff like that are the same across the board. So I thought, you know, maybe it's time to try it. So I am no longer taking a laptop with me every day. I just take my little portfolio that's got my iPad in it, and I'll see how this works. I also realized I was also carrying a giant bag of stuff to my office, you know, the office that's one song ride away, and I hardly ever used anything in that bag. So this is also a way of lightening my load as to what I take back and forth and never use.
Last couple of years, my bag consisted mostly of an iPad mini and an iPhone and an Android phone. Mm-hmm. You know, the two phones don't take up much space, and neither does iPad mini. But over the past year, I've been carrying either an 8-inch or 10-inch Windows tablet because I like Windows 10 so much.
Mm-hmm.
So I've actually been carrying more back and forth now than I did before. But it is so handy having a full Windows machine, or, you know, just in my backpack when I need it.
Yeah, it's a love-hate relationship I have with carrying everything you need versus not wanting to be, you know, weighted down. When I first started working at Columbia, when I was a postdoc, I did, for a whole year, I didn't carry much except my phone and I think a little backup battery. I didn't actually carry a bag. I just carried a hooded sweatshirt that had, like, a couple of things in the pockets. And that was nice and freeing for my commute. But then over time, it was, well, it'd be really nice to have this. And then, of course, as soon as tablets became popular, it was, oh, I guess I got to have something for a tablet now.
Yeah, yeah. It's an interesting problem. I I don't have a good solution for it. And I should note, I do have a full-size notebook at work, but it's not running Windows 10, so it's no fun to use.
Well, you see, that's my other weird thing. I am a rebel in that I have an office computer provided to me by my workplace. I just don't like it very much, yeah. And I don't want to use it for what I consider important work, which is everything I do. So I'd rather, you know, take the burden of having my own private machines that I can do whatever I want with, and thankfully in the university structure we're able to do that because we don't have some of the, you know, reporting requirements and such that government and corporate life might have. Mm. So I have been doing that. I also, since you brought up Windows machines, I dug up a little Asus E netbook that I had bought in 2008. It's running Windows 7, and it should be eligible for a Windows 10 upgrade. So I'm thinking I might upgrade it to Windows 10 just to see how it runs.
Yeah, you know, in fact, now that you mention that, I also have a 2008 Asus netbook. I can't remember which model it is, but I have it over. I installed it in my mom's home, although my mom doesn't really use a computer. But, you know, somebody around there, my nephew or somebody stops by, there's something for them to use. And it also is running Windows 7. In fact, I think it started with XP and then upgraded to Windows 7. But in any case, I upgraded it to Windows 10 yesterday.
Okay. Well, I will, as I am at my office this week, since it's running at my office, I will be playing around with it here and there. And, you know, it's doing 1,000 updates almost right now to try to get itself ready to even get the little Get Windows 10 button. So,
You know, and because it is a netbook, make sure you have enough room to install. I think you need 8 gigabytes free of hard drive or something.
I think I have that, but I will double check.
And by the way, this was a little bit of a challenge on the netbook in my mom's home because, you know, being old school, this is 2008, remember? I think I bought it in 2008. Being old school at the time, I divided the hard drive into two partitions for safety. And so the boot partition is, you know, a little bit on the small side. I think it's like 40 gigabytes in the D partition where the data lives is like 60 gigabytes. So I had to clean up a bit of hard drive space on the C partition to make enough room to do the upgrade.
Us old timers with our love of partitioning and, you know, those things.
And I haven't partitioned since then. There's just been no need to.
Yep. So I will keep everyone updated on if this mobile decision actually works, if I decide to stay with this, and what expected or unexpected things happen. But at least I feel less wasteful in that I don't have a MacBook Air that's still in very good shape doing nothing at all. Because I'm pretty sure it will get it'll be fine with El Capitan running on it and all of that. So,
oh gosh, that's coming out soon, isn't it?
It will be. Everything will be coming out very soon.
Yeah, exciting times. Okay, so I bought a 99-cent watch face and a Nexus 6. You apparently have been on a buying spree of sorts.
Well, now that I know you bought a Nexus 6, I guess you did spend more than me, but I feel like I've been spending a lot. A couple of interesting things. I've been buying little things that I kind of think will improve my life, and I wanted to share some of those things. The first is that Apple Watch docks are starting to be designed for nightstand mode, which is coming in watchOS 2.0. The original docks that many companies were coming out for the Apple Watch held the watch either flat so that you kind of laid the watch down on it and it pointed to the sky. Some of them angled it so that you laid the watch on it and the watch was angled up and looking at you in, I guess, what you would refer to as portrait mode. But then Apple threw a curveball and put out nightstand mode, which you have to have the device lying in landscape for. And all of these docks were not designed for that. So I found Spigen and a few other dock manufacturers have stands on eBay now for very low cost that will hold the device in landscape mode. So I picked up one of those for $10. I also decided to rehab my 6-year-old.
Can I ask you about the dock? So does the dock do anything?
There's no discussion about it. Yeah.
So for less than $10, is it literally just something that holds the watch up, or does it have
it
a charger? Or
I have not found a dock that is not the cost of a dock plus a charger that has a charger built into it. So these all are assuming that you are going to put your Apple Watch charger into basically a little cable channel and push it up into the dock so that it fits right. And I thought about that. I thought, well, maybe I don't want to do that. But then I realized when I travel, since this dock is fairly small, I might just want to take the whole dock with me so I can still prop up my watch when I'm traveling.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's a good point. I was hoping that we'd start seeing some Apple Watch docks that had the integrated charger. But yeah.
I thought $10 was a little low for something that would include a charger. But
I would have bought a bushel of them if they had included the chargers.
Yeah. By the way, one of the things I learned is that my Moto 360 can be charged in an Energizer key charger. So,
yeah.
I have in my office. So, you know, or Qi, I should say. So that's kind of a handy little thing. Since we're compliant. You were saying you did something to your MacBook?
Yeah, the old 2009 MacBook Pro that I had, I decided to give it some upgrades. So it's had a service battery message for a while now. So I bought a new battery that was around $100. That was around $30. And I bought 4 more gigs of RAM for it to upgrade it from 4 gigs to 8. So that was together. Both of those cost around $100.
So I have some questions. I also have actually inherited it from my daughter. So the MacBook Pro that my daughter used through high school, which I inherited when she went to college, is a 2009 MacBook Pro, also with 2 gigs of RAM. I think it has 2 gigs of RAM anyway.
It probably does. That was the standard configuration because when I bought mine, I had to fight with the university IT group that I needed more than 2 gigs of RAM because they were quite confused. And then I explained to them the virtual machines would probably take up space.
So in order to install more gigs of RAM, I would go up to 8 gigs by 2 4-gig SIMs. I guess so. The first question is, one, that works, right? So you can go from 2 to 8.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And two, so did you have to buy the special screwdriver?
I already have actually the set of special screwdrivers.
Okay.
So I didn't think too much about it, but I think the 2009 might have been the last year without the panel lobe screws. You'd have to check yours. You might have actual regular screws on there,
or you have to
buy the little special screwdriver. And if you – here's a tip. If you buy a lot of the batteries, because it might be time to replace the battery in that thing anyway, a lot of them come with those screwdrivers. So it's on the eBay listings, and you might be able to pick up a free set of screwdrivers. And then if you're doing the RAM upgrade, while you're back there for the battery, you're also there for the RAM.
Now, when I looked at the back of my MacBook Pro, it had a ton of those. I can't remember if it was pentel lobe screws, but it had a ton of screws, whatever they were.
So yes.
Do you have to take them all out?
Because
you have to lift the back,
actually,
right? Or do you take the keyboard side off?
You take the back side off, and there's actually a website on support.apple.com that tells you how to replace the RAM modules. Because that was one of the last user serviceable generations of devices. I mean, the MacBook Airs, you can't do much with at all.
No,
MacBook
sealed.
Pros, you can still do some stuff with.
Yeah.
Although you can replace, if you are savvy, you can replace the battery on the MacBook Airs.
Yeah. So how long did this surgical replacement process take?
I will let you know. I ordered them the parts a couple of days ago, so I'm waiting for them to arrive.
Okay, I'll be curious because I've been giving some serious thought to upgrading that MacBook Pro from 2 to 8 gigs of RAM.
Well, I've been reading online, and is it worth it? And I was reading people saying that it runs Yosemite nicely. So that kind of shocked me because right now it's still stuck on, I think, 10.7, which was Lion. So I'll be interested to see how it runs. I plan on trying to upgrade it to Yosemite.
Huh, interesting. Yeah, I'm trying to remember what Yosemite is going. I mean, not Yosemite. What's the next one? El Capitan is going to run because I think one of my machines is left out in the cold, but can't remember which one now.
It might be the old MacBook because I'll be interested to see if I get an upgrade for El Capitan on that one. I kind of doubt it. I think Yosemite might be the last operating system that hits those 2009.
Okay, and so what else did you buy in your spending spree?
Oh, let's see, more eBay fun. Apple Watch bands have been my obsession over the last few months. I now own, this is kind of sad to admit, every one that I can, in at least one color. I do swap them fairly often. About once a week, I change watch bands just for fun, just for something different. But I've been interested in the aftermarket fitness bands that are looking fairly close to the OEM fitness band, But of course, much cheaper than $50 each. In fact, I found a pack of three of them in three different colors for $30. So I decided to buy that. I figured for $30, I'll see. And plus, the colors that I was able to get are my school's colors. So I thought, well, on game days and stuff, even if I only wear the band one day a month or something like that, it's, you know, worth it just to have some kind of little accent. And then you can also buy the adapter kits now fairly easily for the Apple Watch, so that you can turn regular watch bands into Apple Watch bands. So I bought one for $7, and a paracord bracelet band for a regular watch off of eBay for $20. So I'm hoping to throw that adapter kit on and have kind of a cool paracord watch bracelet band that I can use.
Nice. Nice.
So that was my whole spending spree. I did a bunch of spending, but, you know, in the end, I think these are things that I'll really enjoy using. But I suppose this is my admission of non-fiscal responsibility that I am making here. But we'll see. We'll see how things turn out. The watch bands, I will definitely let you know if they're decent for $10 each instead of $50 each.
Yeah. You know, I'm pretty happy with the watch band on my Moto 360, but, you know, I'm kind of notorious for having these things snap on me, so I should probably prepare for the day. And I still don't know how to change the watch band on this. I'm kind of looking at the back of it now. It's not obvious just by looking at it.
Yeah, I don't know how you change the watch band on a Moto 360. Yeah. I know that, for example, the Gear watch, you can't change the bands because they build technology into the bands.
Ah.
But I thought you could change the bands on the 360.
Yeah, I think so too, because I've seen, you know, just the watch bands themselves being sold on Amazon. So for the 360, so there must be a way to do that.
It looks like, from what I am seeing online, you'll need a flathead screwdriver bit so that you can fit between the watch and the housing. Basically, it's a tension band.
So okay.
Or if you're like me, you buy the little tool that you can get on Amazon that looks like a little Y, like a U, actually, that kind of fits in that channel and you just push it over. I definitely, if you are a watch aficionado and you change those tension bands a lot, if you use flathead screwdrivers, you will cut yourself over and over again. So I definitely recommend, it's a $7 thing. I'll even put the link in the show notes.
Okay.
That will save your hands from utter destruction if you like to change watch bands and you don't have something like the Apple Watch where it's just pop on and off.
All righty. Okay. So that brings to an end, unless you have something else to add, Mobile Use Podcast number 129. Got anything else, John?
No. My rumors of moving to Antarctica are completely classified, so don't...
All right. We won't be talking about that anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. We will talk to you next time.